Hi, I'm Mel Pickup, Chief Executive of Bradford Teaching Hospitals, and welcome to this month's episode of our podcast series, where I'm sitting down with colleagues and partners from across the Trust and the wider community to find out more about them and their contribution to the health and well-being of the people here in Bradford. This month, I'm joined by two fantastic guests here to discuss the power of arts and culture on population health. Saima Alam is founder and artistic director of the Bradford Literature Festival, and Colette Browns is a community development worker and the Living Well lead for Bradford District and Craven. Saima, you launched the festival back in 2014. Why did you feel Bradford needed a literature festival?
So I grew up in Halifax, so I have to confess I'm not a native Bradfordian. And I started working in Bradford, and I think I was really struck by a couple of things. One of them was, you know, we as a city have been going through periods of trying to regenerate, and I felt what we needed was a cultural renaissance to boost that economic regeneration and to pull people back into the city, because it just felt like people had got out of the habit of coming in. And then the other key factor for me was I spent about 18 months doing quite a lot of work in the education sector. And the thing that I was really struck by was, obviously, we are, we have the youngest population in Europe. We've got this growing population. And I was really struck by the areas that that population growth was coming from, the correlation in terms of schools and school attainment, and also actually looking at things like what the LEP were predicting as the jobs of the future. And I felt there was a real disconnect. And I'm second generation. My parents were first generation, and we had this real myth of, the myth of return that all immigrants have, and we were going to go back home. And actually what that meant for me was that I spent the first 8 years of my life constantly going home. I went to junior school again in what would now be, and I always get the years wrong, year four. I went just in time for the summer term, and that year I had 34% in my English vocabulary. And the next year I had 99%. And the thing is, I am very, very definitely not an Einstein, but it was literally my mother took me to the library religiously every Saturday. And that was what made that difference. And I think when I was sort of putting these different jigsaw pieces together, and also going to other literature festivals, because I am a complete bookworm, what I was really struck by was that, it's mainly a middle-class crowd, upwards, and mainly white. I would look around those rooms and I would think, now every child in this room will go back to a house full of books. And actually the children who really, really need this inspiration are never going to be in these rooms because they can't afford it. So that's a very long-winded way of saying that all those different things came together to create the Literature Festival. And it's the reason why, the festival has the makeup that it does. So I set up a Literature Festival just according to what I thought was common sense, and very much what was common sense for Bradford. And for me, one of those things was about everybody feeling connected. I suppose like a bridging space, something where everybody could come together and have the conversations that needed to be had. I felt at times that I was in rooms where there were lots of elephants in the room that people wouldn't discuss. And then, it has an education program that is completely free, because I didn't want there to be any barriers, and a children and young people's program that is free. And actually our main ticketed program is free if you are on benefits in social housing. For me, that was really, really important, because I think we talk about the fact that we want people to engage with culture. We know how good it is in terms of health and well-being. I think a test for me is always that, could a single mum who's in social housing, on benefits, could she bring her kids to an event at the festival? And that will always be my litmus test. And I think that's really, really important.
And feel comfortable in
Absolutely.
Doing so. And so you enter the space and you are, it's a great leveller, really, in that
Completely.
Sense.
We had an event pre-COVID a few years ago at the university with a group of women, and they said, we walk past the university all the time, but it would never occur to us that we could actually walk inside. We run our education program at the university because it creates that aspiration for young people. So, I think those things are really, really important to bear in mind.
And 9 years on, you've clearly finessed the planning process. You must have developed a sort of a winning formula for it. But in the early days in particular, I guess, and even, you know, latterly because of things like COVID, and what have been the major challenges over that 9 years that you've kind of come up against in taking this wonderful thing forward?
I think the initial conversation that I always remember is my first conversation about the festival. I said to someone, yeah, I had this great idea. I think it'd be a really good idea to have a literature festival, and it will do X, Y, and Z, and it'll be great for the visitor economy, but it will do all of this stuff for our young people. And they said to me, the fact that you want to set up a South Asian literature festival focusing on Urdu and Punjabi in Bradford is fantastic. And it's been a bit of a recurring theme, because obviously people look at me and they make certain assumptions. I think I was quite frank. I said, I think, well, Bradford needs one of those, like a hole in the head. I said, if you take someone like me as a fairly typical example, but I said, but my consumption of Urdu literature is probably about 1%, and that's because I'm a bit of a poetry geek. But I said, you know, my daughter speaks Urdu because my mother doesn't speak English. Her literacy is all about English. And I said, what we actually need is something that brings all of those things together. So I think there was a challenge initially in terms of what this festival was. And also that thing of, well, people in Bradford don't read books. What do you mean you want a literature festival, or you're inviting our authors up? You know, nobody will come to the events. And I think it's been really brilliant to see those perceptions change. You know, Bradford has had challenges in the past, and it's brilliant to see where we are now. But that means it's actually, you know, we have to be brilliant and the best. And I don't think we should settle for anything less, because actually that means that our young people aim to be the brilliant and the best and have their aspirations raised and know that they can do all these things and, you know, meet all these wonderful people and go to wherever they want in the world. And I think that is absolutely the thing that we should be driving for.
And over that time, what would you say have been one of the two of the major highlights? And also, how do you sort of measure the impact in terms of assuring yourself with all that ambition about how good you want it to be that actually it was as good as I hoped it would be? What do you count as kind of great measures of success?
There's that kind of very I suppose quantitative measure where we look at the number of events, we look at the audience numbers, and you know, we started off in 2014. It was always meant to be the marker in the ground, but it was 2 days, 25 events, and we had just over 900 attendances across that. And 2019, 10 days, 476 events, 70,000 attendances. And you know, if I look at this year, you know, we've been through that COVID challenge, and you know, already, touchwood, we are past the figures for 2022 and, you know, just edging up on 2019. So I think that's one measure of success. And then I think there are those moments, you know, I remember the first time having stalked her all through the Hay Festival, Jeanette Winterson said, I will come to your festival. So I think personally, I have those little markers, you know, certain people who said yes, certain people who came and said how brilliant it was, or what wonderful time they've had. And I think the thing that always stays with me is that people come and they love the city. You know, they look up at the architecture, they have a great time. You know, we pride ourselves on our hospitality. So, you know, we say, come to Bradford and have a great time. So I think there are those things. And then, you know, if I look at the education program, we started off with just a couple of events in 2014. By 2016, we were running education days rather than just going out to schools. And, you know, this year we've got 45,000 places booked across that program. So I think there's those tangible measures, but that feedback that we get from, you know, from young people, I remember somebody saying that this has been the best day of my life. And I actually said to my team, I'm not sure we can use that because it actually sounds like we've made it up.
Use it. Claim that. Own it. As the place-based lead for health and care partnerships, I'm proud that we are sponsors of the festival. But health is perhaps not one of the most obvious outcomes for a literature festival. So how do you feel culture and the arts can contribute to our district's health and well-being?
I mean, I think there's now quite a lot of studies around how culture impacts health. I think with the festival, I'm pretty much from the inception, we're very, very conscious of the place that we are in. So we have a lot of children's activity. We try to thread a lot of messages through. So, for example, our Superheroes Day, people will talk about, you know, what is the food that superheroes eat and things like that. I think in terms of literature, A, there is that pleasure from reading and the sheer escapism, which always appeals to me. But I think a literature festival, particularly one that is constructed in the way that Bradford is, brings people together. Actually, just that chance to have that conversation. You know, we talk about the loneliness epidemic, which obviously post-COVID has, you know, become even more severe. With things like dementia, you know, all of these different things, there are so many things that we can plug into. And what we try to do with the festival is, I suppose, not beat people around the head with it, but, you know, we will run yoga sessions and Tai Chi sessions, just threaded naturally through the rest of the program. We will talk to parents at the end of our storytelling sessions in terms of how they can do this with their children, because I really do have a belief that education has the power to change people's lives. And I think, you know, literacy is the absolute foundation stone of that. And I think when you create changes in those factors, you change people's life outcomes, and that has a massive health impact.
Colette, what do you think about the role of the Literature Festival in supporting the health and well-being of our population?
I think it's a fantastic programme and a well-established festival that we've been promoting through health for, well, since the early days, really. And I think there's some fantastic examples in the programme of how the festival can promote health and well-being. Just a couple of examples that I've picked out. Baby raves, things like the rhythm time and things like that. So that's about getting young people moving, getting them more active, and not just the young people, but actually their parents, carers, grandparents as well. I think there's other sessions within the programme that are really great and focus on some of the key health topics around at the moment. One of them that I picked out was the Let's Talk Menopause, which is a really big subject for a lot of people.
Really hot topic, yeah,
and more people seem to be talking about it at the moment, which is absolutely fantastic. And I loved in the programme it said it's no more a taboo subject and it shouldn't be. So that's obviously a really good opportunity for the Bradford residents to come together and actually learn from some really fantastic experts.
And all of that incredibly helpful for that sense of belonging, tackling isolation, because you're in groups and you're doing and you're seeing, and the trick in all of this, as we know, as kind of health professionals, is to make the things that are going to make you better or keep you well engaging, inviting, exciting, and not over medicalized. And that's the real turnoff for lots of people. That's why people shy away from much of this stuff in the first place.
Absolutely. I always like to refer to the five ways of well-being. Not only is it evidence-based and really popular across the country, but it's simple. It's simple, it's easy, and it's relevant for every single one of us. And just to quickly go through those, the first one is around connecting with others. So absolutely, that's what we've been saying. Being physically active, moving more, so of course. Learning new skills. So quite a lot of the things that we like enjoying is actually learning new skills and giving something a go that can make us feel good. Giving to others, that's another really important element to things in arts and culture. There's a lot of volunteering opportunities, and likewise with the Bradford Literature Festival, there's going to be a lot of volunteering opportunities so you can give to others, but also being present. So that's all around mindfulness. So you can just find them on national websites like Mind or NHS and things like that. But the five ways to wellbeing is just a really simple thing that we can all do for ourselves that doesn't necessarily need to cost a lot or anything like that, but it can just really help us on a day-to-day basis feel good about ourselves and enjoying our lives, really.
What do you think are some of the key issues that all those fantastic things that you've talked about should help us address?
Yeah, I just think at the moment in our communities, it's just really hard to make the healthy choice. We're surrounded by so many challenges at the moment, so it's hard to kind of live that healthy lifestyle that you may want to live, whether that's to do with things like the cost of living crisis. It could be the price of food. We all know how much food's gone up recently. Availability of healthy food. It could be busy lifestyles, you know, not being able to fit in an active lifestyle and get that activity in, or just general stress in family life sometimes. One of the key issues for health in our communities is around levels of obesity at the moment, and we've got quite high levels in Bradford. So there's currently 2/3 of adults who are overweight or obese. So we're not talking small numbers here. It is becoming the bigger population. We've also got 41.5% of our children in year six. So that's age 10 and 11 who are overweight or obese. So it's, you know, it's a big problem. And it's not only the effect of that on the person, but actually on their future lives and how they live their lives, and also medical conditions that they may get and other long-term conditions due to that. So, you know, it's something that we're really wanting to support our local communities with. And that's where I'm really proud to work on the Living Well programme. So that's where we want to make the healthy choice the easy choice. And where we're working right across the city, in all the places where we live, work, study and play, in our communities, in the schools we are, in our workplaces, basically to make the healthy choice the easy choice. Helping people to eat better, move more, sleep well, and have good mental well-being.
Well, you're clearly very passionate about the Living Well brand. And one of the things that's often talked about in this particular area is a term that people may not be that familiar with unless you kind of work in these circles, social prescribing.
Yeah.
What's social prescribing?
Yeah, well, I've been working on social prescribing for a number of years in Bradford, and we've actually had social prescribing type services for many years now. So it's nothing new, but it is kind of coming back into fashion again, so to say. Social prescribing basically aims to support people with any social, emotional or practical needs that they might have. Quite often, those people may be approaching health services or social care services with a medical need. An initial medical need is how it's perceived. But actually, when they might see that social worker or that GP or that nurse, quite often, it's not a medical clinical problem. Quite often, it's something that cannot be fixed with a referral to a hospital, for example, or a prescription, something like that. It's actually other issues within that person's life and other stresses, and that's where social prescribing comes in. We've currently got about 100 social prescribers working in our GP practices and our fantastic voluntary organisations across the district right now. But we've got many, many more staff working across health and care, supporting people, delivering this type of social prescribing, people like social workers, or it may be carers support. And they support people a lot of the time with things like benefits advice. It could be debt advice. It may be housing adaptations, something like that, helping people get out and about a bit more. Or it could be things like accessing counselling and you know, low-level mental wellbeing services, which we know is not that easy sometimes. But one of the main issues that social prescribers are supporting people with is around social isolation and connecting people with their communities. And to me, that's really where I see arts and culture can come into this. And there may be just some examples of our social prescribing staff across the district. They may be helping somebody find a Bollywood Zumba class in West Bowling, let's say. I've seen that one. Or maybe it's a craft session, or maybe knitting, crocheting, something like that. It may be a choir, or it could be signposting them to fantastic organisations like the School of Rock, if you've heard about it. If not, Google it. Or other things like Gig Buddies, which is a fantastic initiative running across the country where they match people up with sort of volunteers who then they can go to gigs, shows, theatre together, and, you know, just helping people to connect there, really. Mm. And I think, obviously, we've got the Bradford Odeon, the Bradford Live going to be opening up again soon. So we're going to have a lot more shows and activities going on. So they're just a couple of the examples there. But I mean, essentially, what social prescribers are there to support people to do is make new friends, get out of the house a little bit more, and connect with your local community, find out what's out there, and have a bit of fun, really. Mm. And through doing that, that's where you can improve your health and well-being and sustain it for a longer time, because then you've got the skills and knowledge to know where to go to get involved in different activities.
And unlike everybody's kind of concept of a prescription, it's not about the pills, it's not a cream or an ointment. It's something very, very different that does just as well, if not better.
At
solving your particular problem of that, whatever that might be.
Yeah, and it could be, you know, lots of different things like, you know, cycling, walking, getting out into green spaces is a really big one. So, yeah, the good thing about social prescribing is that they find out what that person is interested in. Yeah, they listen to them, they give them time, and then they come up with a plan together. So it's very person-centred.
So, City of Culture 2025, it's fast approaching. What do you think are the opportunities that such a fantastic, exciting, prestigious designation is going to bring to this city?
Yeah, I think there's going to be so many opportunities, and I think it's just fantastic. And as a Bradford resident, I remember the day it was announced, and it was just such a buzz in the city about it. It's absolutely fantastic. And I think we've got so many opportunities at the moment, not only in this build-up period and the year of the City of Culture, but what's more important to me is actually sustaining that as we go forward, so we're kind of still benefiting from that investment and from all the fantastic activities way beyond 2025. One of the first actions will be to create a new culture and health network. There's lots of examples out there of health organisations getting involved in arts and culture, but nowhere to kind of come together and share our examples, really. I also think we've got lots of fantastic culture and arts organisations in Bradford. And again, I don't think they've always got the connection with health that probably they want. So for me, the Health and Culture Network is a fantastic opportunity to bring us together and share our experiences and bring more investment in.
And Simon, have you started thinking about the Literature Festival in 2025 and how you're going to harness the City of Culture and the benefits that will bring?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been thinking about this for a really long time. So the festival was involved in the bid writing process. There's obviously been lots of plans in place in terms of, you know, what the festival can do during that time. We're obviously having discussions at the moment. You'll have seen all the jobs being advertised, and I mean, it's a really exciting time, for the culture sector in Bradford. I think for someone like myself who, you know, obviously has been around now for about 9 years and was very new to the cultural space, actually the way that the sector has developed, has been really, really heartening to see. It's been brilliant to play a key role in that as the festival. And I think, you know, now we've got City of Culture, we've got this great, amazing moment. I'm really looking forward to being able to, you know, create some really, really brilliant programming to sit within that. I mean, obviously the festival, you know, will be happening as normal, but some of it will be, and I don't say abnormal because that sounds really weird, but obviously we will be doing, you know, things that we wouldn't normally do. So some of the program will sort of spread out a little bit so that you'll see more things during the year. And I probably shouldn't say too much more because I might get sort of slapped on the wrist.
Spoiler alert.
But, you know, we will be aiming to run the biggest and brightest festival that we've had to date.
Fantastic.
In that year, obviously.
And not to detract, of course, from the Literature Festival that's about to start. And we can't go away from this conversation without giving it a really good plug. So what are some of the highlights of this year's programme?
You know, I always think that the really lovely thing about the festival is that when I speak to different people, their highlights are so different. And I get asked this question quite a lot, and it's always like, I always feel like a mother who's trying to sort of answer that question about who's your favourite child. But there are some things I'm really, really excited about. I'm a huge Nina Simone fan, and we have got, you know, it's a 20-year anniversary, so we've got a tribute concert. We have got, obviously, you know, it's the 3-year anniversary of the killing of George Floyd. So we have Keith Ellison joining us from America. He's the Attorney General of Minnesota, and he prosecuted the George Floyd case. And his new book is out, Breaking the Wheel of Police Violence. It has a foreword by George Floyd's brother. So Keith will be taking part in a couple of events, one around the impact that moment had on society from a business and cultural perspective. Because, you know, you will remember there was such an outpouring at that moment. We will be launching his book. And it's also the 60-year anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King. So he'll be taking part in that. And then, other than that, I mean, we have Michael Palin. We've got Lenny Henry, which I'm just so excited about. The comedy evening is going to be brilliant this year. And actually, I mean, yeah, the festival this year, I think I always feel like this each year. I sort of look at it and I say, oh, you know, it's, I think we've done a better job than last year, but I think that that's that key part of that learning and actually keeping on moving forward. And I probably haven't really answered your question, but it's a great program and, you know, have a look.
And so where can listeners find out more about how to get involved?
So you can go onto our website, which is bradfordlitfest.co.uk. In fact, all our social media handles are at Bradford Litfest. If you're like me and a bit archaic and a bit old fashioned, you can go along to Waterstones in Bradford, Leeds, Huddersfield, Sheffield, Wakefield. In fact, all the local Waterstones in West Yorkshire. If you go along, you'll be able to pick up a copy of the festival brochure and also at places like Visit Bradford. And probably a huge number of others. Thank you so much to everyone who's actually holding the brochures for us. But yeah, they are dotted around the city as well.
Colette and Saima, thank you both so much for joining me today. The best of luck, Saima, to you and all the team of the Literary Festival. It's very shortly upon us. It's next week.
It's next week. In fact, our education programme starts tomorrow.
For what I'm sure will be a very, very successful festival. I'm certainly looking forward to it. Thank you both.
Thank you.